Hello, and welcome to this podcast to talk about the Annual Improvements 2009-2011 cycle. My name is Michael Stewart, Director of Implementation Activities at the ISB, and I'm joined with Amaro Gomez, ISB board member. The views expressed in today's podcast will be those of the presenters and may not necessarily be those of the ISB or the IFRS Interpretations Committee. The official views of the ISB are those that are published in the IFRSs after they've gone through full due process. Amaro, we're here to talk about the Annual Improvements IFRS that we recently published, and this was published on the 17th of May this year, and the exposure draft that had preceded this had been published last June and had originally included seven proposed amendments. Now, we've finalised this. One of the proposed amendments that was in the ED that we didn't finalise was a proposed amendment to IS1 that was intended to align the terminology in IS1 with the terminology in the new chapters of the Conceptual Framework for Financial Reporting, and the boards decided to defer those to a later date. So the proposed amendments that have been finalised now, those were discussed by the ISB and by the Interpretations Committee at meetings between March 2010 and January 2011, with the comment letters being analysed and discussed in January and February 2012.
Yeah, Michael, and I should remind our listeners that the final documents contain six amendments, the document you just referred to, affecting five IFRSs. However, this podcast, we are focusing only on three main amendments. Those three main amendments, two of those are related to IFRS 1, first-time adoption of International Financial Reporting Standard, and one is related to IAS 1, presentation of financial statements. The first amendment that we would like to talk is the amendment associated with IFRS 1, first-time adoption of International Financial Reporting Standards. And the main question sent to the Interpretation Committee was, can IFRS 1 be applied more than once, regardless of whether entity applied IFRS 1 in the past? And I would like to turn to you, Michael, to explain and talk a little bit about what were the concerns identified by us, by the Interpretation Committee and by the ISB related to this question, and briefly talk about the description or provide a description of the amendment itself.
Sure. Well, the concern arises because there can be circumstances when a company has been applying IFRSs perhaps for a number of years and then ceases to do so for a period of time and then at a later date starts or needs to start applying IFRSs again. And an example might be for a company that was listed and was therefore using IFRSs because they were listed. Perhaps they then go private and they revert to their national GAAP. But then after a period of time, perhaps in their national GAAP, they then adopt IFRSs through the country, and so they then have to restart using IFRSs. So the question was, well, how should they re-adopt? And looking at IFRS 1, it seemed to suggest that you should apply that again when they start to adopt IFRSs for a second time. But it wasn't clear. So there was some uncertainty, and so one of the first objectives was to remove that uncertainty to make clear that yes, when you do apply IFRSs again, having not applied them in the previous financial statements, that IFRS 1 is still the applicable standard to look to for restarting applying IFRSs. But one of the comments, or some of the comments that we got back through the comment letters, was about how that company should re-adopt IFRSs. The proposal had been that they simply apply IFRS 1 in the same way as any other company that is moving from a previous GAAP to IFRSs. But some ask, well, what if the period of time since they last applied arthrosis is not that long? Could they not simply restart using arthrosis on the same basis as they used to apply arthrosis? In other words, as if they had not stopped applying arthrosis. And the Interpretations Committee and the Board both thought that was a reasonable suggestion. So what we've done with this amendment, as well as clarifying that IFRS 1 is the standard to apply, we've said that the company has a choice. They can either apply IFRS 1 in full with all the required exceptions and exemptions that are in there, or it can resume reporting in accordance with IFRS as if it had never stopped. And that in either of those circumstances, it should explain the fact that it has readopted IFRS and to explain why that's the case, and also to explain the election that it's made, whether it's decided to apply IFRS 1 in full or whether it's decided to readopt as if it had never stopped applying IFRS.
Excellent, Michael. Thank you. I think this is, of course, a very important issue in many countries that are adopting IFRS now but have the experience of companies within that country that already adopted in the past and now have this point well clarified by the board. Well, the second amendment is still related to IFRS 1, first-time adoption of international financial reporting standards, but this is related to the borrowing costs. In IFRS 1, paragraph D23 treats questions associated with transitional provisions for borrowing costs. So the main question was for us to clarify those transitional provisions when adopting IFRS 1. And Michael, can you talk a little bit or drive us through the concerns identified by us and the description, a brief description of the amendment?
Sure. Yes, this one was one of those exemptions, the optional exemptions within IFRS 1, which refers us to the transition provisions, or is based on the transition provisions in the main IFRS that it's relating to, in this case, IAS 23 on borrowing costs. And the difference that we have with the first-time adopter, of course, is that it might have been capitalising borrowing costs under previous GAAP on a basis that is different from IFRS's. And so the transition would be therefore different depending on where they've come from. And there were two concerns in particular that were identified. One was costs that had been included in self-constructed assets that were completed assets sitting on the balance sheet at the date of transition, and included within that cost is a borrowing costs component, but that had been calculated on a previous GAAP basis. Now, the question was, well, should the company be unravelling that and restating it in accordance with an IFRS-based calculation of that borrowing cost? Should it leave it as it is? Should it simply remove it and not replace it? So there's questions about your existing balance. And on that one, we decided that you should just keep it as it is. So whatever cost you had included under previous GAAP relating to borrowing costs for self-constructed assets should simply stay there. There's no need to make an adjustment on transition for that particular cost component. And then the other issue related to assets that were in the course of construction at the date of transition that would qualify for capitalisation under IFRS for borrowing costs. And for the borrowing costs incurred post-transition, should those be capitalised into the cost of that asset that was already under construction? And if so, should it be capitalised on a previous GAAP basis or should it be capitalised on an IFRS basis? And with this one, the standard IFRS 1 was until now silent on this. And so it led to some uncertainty, which is one of the reasons why we decided to clarify this. And the way in which we've clarified it is to say that you would capitalise borrowing costs post-transition relating to these assets under construction that qualify for capitalization of borrowing costs, and that you should do so on an IFRS basis, so using the IAS 23 methodology.
Excellent. I think this is another point that acknowledges the procedures adopted before moving to IFRS. In some situations, they must be carried forward in order to keep alignment with IFRS and alignment with the acknowledgement that before the adoption, they did have adopted procedures, accounting procedures that are recognized as good quality accounting. So the very last amendment that we'd like to talk today is the amendment on, related to the IS-1 presentation of financial statements. And actually the amendment is a clarification of requirements for comparative information in accordance with IAS-1. So Michael will talk to us again about the concerns we identified when exploring the issue and a brief description of the amendment. Could you be?
Sure. yes, this relates to, I guess there are two elements to it, aren't there? First of all, the opening statement of financial position. Now, that's something that we introduced a few years ago in circumstances where we have a change in accounting policy, where we've adjusted the comparatives, or perhaps there's been some sort of restatement or reclassification of items in the comparative period. And then the opening statement of financial position is required to be given to illustrate how that has changed as a result of the change in policy, etc. And the question related to, well, if you've just given 1 year of comparatives, that's everybody knows when they would present that opening statement of financial position. But what if you've given a second year of comparatives? Should it be at the beginning of that second year, or should it still just be at the beginning of the preceding year? And looking at that, because the requirements in IFRS's are just for 1 year of comparatives, that it's at the beginning of that preceding year that we should require that opening statement of financial position. So we've clarified that. And then the second issue was to do with what are the requirements when there's additional comparative information provided beyond the minimum. So as I said before, the minimum required is always 1 year of comparatives, but sometimes a company may voluntarily give more, or perhaps the regulator requires them to give an extra year. And what we wanted to clarify there was that that's fine. If you give the additional information, then if you give, for example, an extra balance sheet, then you should give that balance sheet prepared in accordance with IFRS's, and all the notes relevant to that balance sheet should also be given. So, for example, your property, plant and equipment note would have the extra information to do with that extra year that you've given. So that was the first thing that we were clarifying there. We were also saying if you give an extra financial statement, so for example an extra balance sheet, it doesn't mean that you also have to give an extra income statement or an extra statement of cash flows or an extra statement of changes in equity. So you can give selective information so long as you give the supporting notes for that, and so long as it's prepared in accordance with IFRS's.
Excellent. Many thanks for that, Michael. I think we provided all the clarifications associated with our with these three amendments in accordance with our published improvements to IFRS for this cycle 2009-2011. And I just would like to remind that details of these and other amendments can be found in the annual improvements 2009-2011 cycle of IFRS, published on 17th May 2012.
More information can be found on the IFRS website, and we'd just like to say thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye.